Chapter 4, Ellie, January 18th through 21st, 2019, Chicago. The weekend in Chicago got off to a frazzled start when Luca, disturbed by the airport and out of routine journey, had a long, drawn outburst before they took off from the tarmac at San Francisco International. Ellie had anticipated it and deployed her portable arsenal of defense weaponry to stave off regular meltdowns, compression vest, chewy toy, and headphones. But, as expected, it had all been too much for him, especially past his usual bedtime. As days went, it was a pretty intense Friday. That morning, after dropping off Nathan, she'd driven Luca to his weekly appointment at the UC Davis Mind Institute, usually a 90-minute trip each way, and the traffic, naturally, with her full schedule that day, had been particularly sluggish. Their appointments were vital, though, to Luca's progress, and she had worked so hard to find him the best supports. She would never miss one, not in a million years. Luca was now used to the doctors and speech, physical, and occupational therapists. They knew just how to handle him, and the visits there and back were familiar to him by now. His language still hadn't developed, but he was making new sounds and had gained some motor skills, like finally holding his own sippy cup. Ellie was proud of these triumphs, not just of Luca, but of herself for finding him what must be the best care in the world. Still, he was usually tired after the appointments, and there was no rest for the weary, as they'd booked a red-eye flight for Friday night. It was the only way Ellie could make it work, and she figured they would all sleep on the plane. Stanley had changed his own flight to accompany them and paid for theirs in the process. Ellie knew the trip and the weekend wouldn't be easy. It immediately crossed her mind when her father first suggested they all go to Chicago for the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. It was so touchy to take Luca out of his home environment, but with Enzo's death and the shock she was feeling, she'd agreed. Now was the time to be with family. It would be challenging, but worth it, she'd hoped. Simona collected their groggy group from O'Hare International arrivals at dawn, pulling up in her tornado-red Volkswagen Jetta sport wagon and pursing her lips as she handed out coats and hats for the children, which, along with little snow boots, she'd borrowed from a neighbor. Ellie had thought to bring the classic camel coat her parents had given her from Marshall Fields her last Christmas at home before leaving for Chicago, and that they swore would last her a lifetime. They all put on their extra layers, Stanley helping Ellie secure the boys in two rented child safety seats while Simona placed their bags in the hatchback. Stanley was attached to the boys now, having spent a whole week seeing them either at Enzo's house or Ellie's apartment. He remained bright and cheerful, at odds with Simona's stoic manner. Ellie knew her mother wasn't a morning person and probably resented the early morning collection, but still, here they all were, together at last. "You look tired, Ellie," Simona observed as she checked her rearview mirror and pulled out of the parking space. "Thanks, Mom," said Ellie, scoffing a little. "Newsflash, I am." Ellie and her mother had a somewhat arm's-length relationship. Simona was successful in her field as an epidemiologist. She was cool, level-headed, intelligent, and unflappable in many ways, but she hadn't been a cuddly, homemade sauce-making mother. Stanley's warmth had more than made up for it. Ellie had always felt loved, but now as a mother herself, she could see how their relationship was strained. They just weren't particularly close. "Snow!" shouted Nathan, and he pointed excitedly at the gray-white mounds that had been plowed into the sides of the road, forming snowbanks. "Yes, snow!" grimaced Ellie. She had been looking forward to the boys' reaction to the Chicago weather she considered inclement and didn't miss. Now, admittedly, something about the crisp air that had bitten her ears and nose as they'd stood waiting for Simona's car calmed her. Later, she would let them stumble through the snow in her parents' yard. Maybe they'd build a non-binary snow person, unlike in her day, when the snow community was dominated by men, albeit vegans. On entering the house, a once-run-down gable-front farmhouse with an expansive porch that Stanley and Simona had purchased when they could scarcely rub two nickels together as young parents, then spent years remodeling, Ellie breathed the familiar smell of her childhood home. Yet it smelled mustier, older, perhaps. For the first time, as it was such a long time since she'd been there, having been dealing with childbirth and the travails of motherhood, among other things, she realized that her parents were aging. As Dogzilla greeted the whole crew with face licks all around, Ellie noticed the decor looked saggy and tired, with newspapers and books scattered about. standards had slipped. Were her parents unable to keep up with housework anymore, or had they simply taken a more relaxed approach? Nathan simply could not wait to get into the snow. "Outside!" he cried after they got the bags in. As Simona began preparing breakfast of eggs over the stove, he ran to the glass doors and repeated, "Outside!" "We will, Glitterbug," Ellie said, crossing to her youngest and wrapping her arms around him. "But let's put something in your tummy first." Stanley, despite fatigue, took the two boys on a house tour. They had both been there before, but only as babies and had no recollection of it. So, said Simona, as she moved the spatula around the pan. "So," said Ellie. "A long week." "Not for you," smiled Ellie. "Total freedom with Dad gone." "Ha," said Simona. "Yeah, lots of peace and quiet." Ellie wasn't quite sure what to say to Simona, not feeling at ease in her presence, especially when they hadn't seen each other in so long. Ellie felt a pressure to always impress her mother, to tell her of achievements, of goals she'd conquered that Simona had envisioned for her. Simona had always been an advocate for women's rights and rallied against societal norms imposed by the patriarchy. She had urged Ellie to pursue a less female-dominated field like she had, and successfully steered her away from her original plan to parlay her facility with languages into a career as a diplomatic interpreter, a decision Ellie felt was, perhaps, the original sin. She should have followed her heart. As it turned out, Ellie had perforce taken on the patriarchy in her jobs and had regularly run rings around her male counterparts intellectually. She had gone toe-to-toe with the men who had told her to sit in a corner and take notes and up against comments such as, "Who invited the secretary of the Lollipop Guild?" and the snickers and juvenile sexist nose-thumbing. And look where that had gotten her. "How's the new job going?" asked Simona, as if reading her mind. "Good, Mom," replied Ellie, as her eyes fell on a dusty shelf where a pink depression glass pitcher from Simona's own mother's farmhouse had sat for as long as she could remember. "The caseload is a lot, and we're dealing with tough problems, you know, with what some of these clients have been through, but it feels like worthy work, like I'm making a difference." "That's good," said her mom, "that you feel that way." Ellie went silent. She had suspected that Simona was disappointed, that she had bowed out of Hutton and Fetterer in the end. She wasn't sure if her mom felt annoyed that she'd caved rather than going another round in the ring, or pure anger at how she'd been treated. A wave of guilt, so familiar to her now, heaved in her stomach. The feeling that she should have toughed it out, that she shouldn't have accepted defeat so easily, that she should have stood her ground. "Hey, Mom," said Ellie, abruptly changing the subject as the thought struck her. "What do you know about Enzo's side of the family? The Ellises?" "I found a diary in a box in his house from Theodora Ellis. Dad doesn't seem to know much, says he can only vaguely remember her being mentioned. Do you remember anything? Do you know what Dad is like when... Sorry, you know what Dad is like when it comes to detail." "Theodora," frowned Simona as she spooned eggs onto two warmed plates. "Well, I guess she went by Teddy," interjected Ellie. "That rings a bell," she paused. "Wasn't she a suffragist or something?" added Simona. "Was she? I don't know," said Ellie, her interest piqued. "I've started reading her diary. Her stories are fascinating. She's only 13. She sounds like a character." "You know, Genevieve gave me a box before she died, letters and things for safekeeping. I think she knew in a way that she was, you know, that she wouldn't be around for much longer." "Oh, that's sad," said Ellie. "A woman's intuition," mused her mother. "Maybe we could have a look later?" "Tomorrow, maybe," said Simona. "We're meeting Martha this afternoon, remember?" Ellie climbed the paisley-patterned carpeted stairs and grasped the brass railing as her eyes drew upwards. The ceiling in the lobby of the Palmer House Hotel, situated on East Monroe Street, was breathtaking. It reminded Ellie of cathedral interiors she'd seen in Italy on family trips. It was filled with color and gilt, with smooth cornered shapes and patterns spread out in an ornate mosaic. Three large panels depicted three Greek gods, the names of which Simona had drummed into Ellie when she was young. Aphrodite, the goddess of love, Apollo, the god of sun, and Pluto, the god of wealth. It was natural for Martha to suggest meeting here, as it was her regular haunt. Nestled under a section of the blue line of the elevated train, called the L by Chicagoans, it was only a few minutes from Water Tower Place, where Simona and Ellie had just spent two carefree hours browsing the shops, and which was just a block from where Martha worked as a head buyer for Saks Fifth Avenue. Ellie had released herself into the break. They had dropped Stanley, Luca, and Nathan at the historic Shed Aquarium on the way, Ellie surrendering to two little boys with ants in their pants and their grandfather, who would not be left home to nap. Stanley, seeming a kid again himself, even offered to take the boys sledding the following day. Despite her initial reservations that Luca couldn't support himself, Stanley assured her he would stay on the sled with him. Then she felt guilty again. She should be the one to sled with Luca. She was so used to doing everything herself, it was taking time to accept help, but she could feel the built-up tension beginning to leave her body. It was such a liberating feeling, though not one she trusted would last. Ellie couldn't wait to see what her mother's oldest friend would be wearing today. One of the reasons Ellie maintained a keen sense of style herself, even on her worst days, was due to the art and daily habit of putting oneself together that she'd learned from Martha. Martha was already at their table in the Lockwood restaurant when Ellie and Simona glided in and she slid out from the semicircle booth to kiss them both on the cheek, giving Ellie a chance to take in her midnight blue St. John's knit suit embossed with bright gold buttons along the jacket's placket, taupe and gray scaparelli scarf, and suede Dior ankle boots. What's your fragrance, Martha? Asked Ellie as she tucked in beside her. It's divine. Bond number 9, New York, Gold Coast, replied Martha. New. I'll send it to you. A perk of a family friend who worked in haute fashion meant intermittent boxes that arrived at her flat in San Francisco, filled with Martha's cast-offs. Sometimes the clothes were brand new, labels still attached. Other times they were vintage items that Martha had finally parted with in another of her wardrobe purges. She would include jewelry, scarves, and on one occasion a Bottega handbag, and she usually included perfume, always wanting to try a new scent herself. Sometimes Ellie felt, as she unpacked the box, the items wrapped carefully in tissue paper, that she was the surrogate daughter Martha never had. She'd been married 3 times, but bore no children. Whether by choice, Ellie never knew and didn't dare ask, but she had a hunch. Martha was a woman who valued, above all, her independence and freedom. When Ellie was very young, she could remember her mother shushing her while on a phone interview for a job. Afterwards, she'd scolded her. Mommy's new job doesn't know she's a mommy. You almost gave the game away, Els. Ellie didn't know what the game was or that she'd even been playing it. Martha and Simona had met in the early 70s during the second wave of feminism when they'd both worked as shop girls at Saks. While Simona eventually left to pursue her master's degree and a career in public health, Martha continued to rise in the Saks ranks. To Ellie, she was always a sophisticated, glamorous woman, permanently, flawlessly assembled. Marveling at Martha's still, thick, glossy hair, Ellie wondered how she managed to keep it that way. She touched her own dull, dry hair and thought how she hadn't even managed a salon visit in months and had to roll her eyes at their rampant social media posts preaching self-care. Martha, catching her gaze, opened her classic Hermes flap bag, her David Yurman bracelets casting down her moisturized wrist. It's actually Hermes, not Hermes. How could I say Hermes? My God, it's like something happens when you're trying to read aloud. All right, moving on. Oh, I brought something, she teased and placed a well-worn deck of tarot cards on the table. Ellie broke into a grin. Oh, Martha, never change, she said. Martha was known for her card-reading prowess, and when Ellie was a student at Adelaide E. Stevenson High School just outside of Chicago and trying to figure out her life plan at age 16, Martha had read Ellie's tarot cards, which had directly influenced her to apply to UC Berkeley for college and then law school. It had been an unusual choice for a girl in her small Midwest town, and she was the only one in her high school to do so, but with Simona's influence and Martha's card reading, the stars had aligned. She studied the set Martha had brought. These were different to the cards she had previously used. They were round, for one thing. She didn't recognize the images, either. Interrupted by a tall, dapper waiter, the women quickly gave their orders, Ellie opting for Caesar salad and flatbread, Martha ordering a crisp bottle of sparkling rosé to share. "Please draw 3 cards, Ellie," she solemnly declared when the waiter had left. Ellie paused over the cards, letting her fingers choose where they wanted to go, as if a magnet was drawing her to just the right circles. Martha turned them over one by one, and like the three gods that Ellie used to rhyme off when they passed through the lobby when she was a child, Martha named the three cards that Ellie had chosen with proclaim. Entangled Lovers, Sword and Shield. Ah, the Enchanted Valley. I've never drawn that card for anyone before. Simona and Ellie leaned in as Martha studied the three cards, the first a glowing image that reminded Ellie of a Gustav Klimt painting, or Himalayan salt rock, such was its light. The third card, the Enchanted Valley, depicted a unicorn set in gold and green forest against a lavender and coral sunset. Ellie, my dear, there are places in this beautiful planet where the veil between the physical and mystical realm is porous. These places are called portals, vortexes, or spirit gateways. In mythology, they are revered as venues where things beyond ordinary reality can unfold. The Enchanted Valley is one such place and divulged only to the few who have the vision and heart to be open to them. Simona regarded Ellie as if something she'd always known had been confirmed. The sacred landscape wants you to know that profound transformation is afoot, Ellie, continued Martha. Wondrous events are unfurling. Meaningful revelations and inner illuminations are close at hand. It is now much easier to manifest your dreams. This is an excellent time to step into your visions for the future. Your actions in the coming year will generate big results. Gateways are opening to show you the places where the veil is especially thin, where you can access with your power, love, and integrity. Wonders are blossoming in your life, including great love. Watch for them. Open your heart to the hallowed, magical energy. The more you become aware of the small marvels in your life, the more they will magnify. Ellie actually gulped at the reading. Great love? Ha! There wasn't even the sniff of a man in her life right now. Who on earth would be interested in a divorced mom in her situation? And easy to now manifest her dreams? Oh, Martha, said Ellie, that all seems so far-fetched right now. Is it some kind of celestial joke? She dabbed at her uninvited tears. Yet your eyes tell a different story, purred Martha, and as we all know, the eyes are the window to the soul. The cards have been right before for you. Where's that wine? Called Ellie, keen to break the attention of her mom and Martha, who were now peering at her too meaningfully. Sorry, but I am not falling into the marriage trap again. Nope, no siree, not a chance. Who said anything about marriage? Simona imbibed, her eyes also slightly shiny. It seemed the reading had affected her, too. Great love doesn't necessarily mean marriage. As the waiter approached their table to uncork the bottle, Ellie couldn't help but ponder the meaning behind her mother's words. Did Simona have another great love? Was she reading more into the cards than Ellie? Or did Martha know something about them all that even they had yet to put into words?